Jackson trying to escape and run for it, and he's got it more. Lamar Jackson down the sideline. Will they give it to him? They will. Touchdown, Baltimore.
And with 1:17 left to play on Wild Card Weekend, the Hayes in the Barn.
Oh my God! I wish you guys could. I wish we had a camera in here so you could see what we're doing. We're just a bunch of clowns in here.
How much fun is that?
What's up, you guys? It is Jake here coming to you on Wednesday, July 14th. Just wanted to record a little opener here to let you guys know we got something a little bit different for you all today. It is a little short sit-down between Spenny and Ted Nguyen of The Athletic to kind of take a look forward at the Week 1 matchup between the Ravens and the Las Vegas Raiders. Ted, in addition to being one of the great film gurus on social media and on The Athletic, is also a Raiders fan. So Spenny reached out to him, set up an interview. I was originally going to be a part of it, but I received an invite to get down to Jimmy's Famous Seafood on Monday night to watch the Home Run Derby. So shout out to RDT and the boys from XF52 for putting on a great event down there. Many beers were had. A lot of fun was had watching the Home Run Derby. Screw you, Pete Alonso. But I just want to let you guys know it's going to be just that today for you all. Like I said, it's running about 20 minutes or so. So that is going to be our early week episode. We'll be back later in the week, probably with like a mailbag or something, a little bit more standard type of episode. So until then, hope you guys enjoy Spenny's chat with Ted Nguyen of The Athletic. Here it is.
All right. I now welcome on a very special guest. It is Ted Nguyen of The Athletic. He is also more importantly famous for his outstanding pizza skills. Ted, how did you get so good at making pizza?
Oh man, just tons of practice. I eat a pizza like every other day. I just got kind of obsessed with doing it. I just have addictive personality. So if I get into something, I'm just going to keep doing it. And kept on getting better at making pizzas every day.
A true football guy through and through. Most of them do have addictive personalities. Full disclosure, right before we started recording, I asked Ted, I was like, oh, I hope you don't mind with the derby on. He was like, oh, no, I don't care. I'm strictly a football guy, which is what we love to hear. But so we're bringing Ted on here to talk Raiders, the opening primetime game in Allegiant Stadium with fans, week one at the Las Vegas Raiders for the Baltimore Ravens. So what would you say grand scale, Ted? Actually, first I want to get into your background a little bit and how you grew to love this sport so much, and just give us a little background story on how it all started.
Yeah, I mean, my family, like, they were Niner fans actually growing up, and I started watching football just because, you know, my family would watch football, but then I decided to deviate from their favorite team and became a Raider fan. Grew up in the Bay Area. I love black, so their uniforms really appealed to me. So I became a Raider fan that way, and just fell in love with the sport. I started a kid in middle school saw me play football during lunch one day and thought I was fast and asked me to join the team. So I joined my first tackle football team in the eighth grade and played through high school. And after high school, I went back to coach. My old coach asked me to come back and help out. So I decided to do it. I fell in love with coaching. So I did that for a while. And while I was coaching, I got my teaching credential, I got my degree, and I was teaching for a while and I started a blog just for fun about the Raiders. And I didn't think anything of it. You know, I was doing it for fun for my friends, and eventually it kind of blew up and got bigger and bigger. And I figured I could do this full time as a job. And, I had a starving artist phase for a couple of years where, you know, it was tough finding work and people were barely paying you for articles or anything. And then I got hired at The Athletic, and it's been a dream come true since.
Well, love to hear it. Love to hear that you stuck true. It's hard. You have two such classic color schemes and uniforms to pick from. You leaned a little bit towards the black, but that's awesome. A ton of people, you know, managing editor of the Baltimore Beatdown, Kyle Barber, I want to give him a little credit. He just got hired by the Baltimore Ravens. So yeah, that starving artist phase is tough And a lot of people go through it, but it makes you better. It makes you stronger. And if you can make it through that, then you can make it through anything. Similarly to how the Raiders made their way out of Oakland, which was devastating to many, and into that beautiful, beautiful Darth Vader gigantic bowl of a stadium. And what is the general scape right now of excitement, and what is going on with Allegiant Stadium able to have fans for the first time?
Oh, man, I got to go check out the stadium for a couple of games last year. And when you actually you're standing in front of this big black, you know, all black glass, huge stadium, you're just like in awe because there's nothing like it. And like I said, I love black. So that color scheme was just pretty breathtaking to see for the first time. And having to, you know, go to the Oakland Coliseum, which was legitimately one of the worst stadiums in the NFL, you know, just years of not updating, years of just neglect. Letting things, yeah, neglect. So it was a pretty dramatic difference coming from, you know, covering Raider games at the Coliseum to checking out this state-of-the-art brand new stadium in Vegas. And it was just a shame that nobody got to see it last year except for media guys. So, you know, I think fans are going to be really excited. Ticket prices are up, you know, pretty high right now, except for the Bengals game for some reason. But, but yeah, it's an amazing stadium. It was a little eerie and weird watching games with absolutely nobody in the stands. But fans are going to love the stadium.
Well, love to hear that. I know that there are a lot of Ravens fans that are planning to make that adventure out to Vegas and get in on those $1,500 seats. The prices for that game individually are through the roof, but wanted to kind of break it up on different sides of the ball. And of course, you know, quickly going through the offseason, the Raiders revamped that offensive line in a very dramatic way. Of course, they go through the draft. They go classic Mike Mayock style, it seems, getting a playoff contending first round pick with playoff experience out of a big school, big Power 5 school in Alex Leatherwood, you know, end up with a great steal in Trevon Merrig and have an outstanding sort of 1-2 pick where a lot of people thought it would have gone differently, and then adding another couple pieces while trying to completely revamp that offensive line, which I don't think a ton of people saw coming. So how is Greg Olsen's side of the ball shaping up to grow from last year as well as potentially be a little bit different? I think Greg Olsen's also maybe one of the most, like, quiet offensive coordinators in the NFL. No one really talks about it. Tom, I guess Gruden steals the show, but what's going on that side of the ball this year, Ted, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's the offensive coordinator in title, but Gruden's right. The guy calling the shots. He's the one, you know, putting the plays in. He's the one game planning. He's coaching the quarterback. He's the man running the show. And Greg Olsen does a great job of, you know, helping Gruden out and assisting as well. So I don't want to take credit from him, but it's definitely Gruden's show when it comes to the offense. And the biggest difference is going to be the offensive line. They did a lot of revamping with the offensive line. They felt like they just weren't getting their money's worth from the offensive line last year because of injuries and just not performing. Traded away Hudson. You know, Andre James is a guy that they're very high on. He's going to be the new center. He does not have a lot of snaps. He's a tackle converted to center, but right. Tom Cable loves him, and this team obviously is showing a lot of faith in him by deciding to go a different direction from Hudson, who was just a rock on his offensive line for a long time. Denzel Good is back. He had a really good last season filling in for, you know, he filled in a right tackle, he filled in a right guard, and he played well in both positions, so he'll be the starting guard this year. Richie Incognito was injured last season, but he when he played the year before in 2019, he was legitimately one of the best guards in the NFL, but he is getting up there in age. So if he can stay in the field, you know, I have confidence he'll be one of the better guards in the league, but, you know, we'll see how he's able to hold up at his age. And at right tackle, you know, traded away Trent Brown. Trent Brown had some problems in Oakland. Some people didn't feel like he was making the best effort to stay on the field, and he did not see a lot of action last year because of injury. And obviously they made a controversial pick in the first round with Alex Leatherwood as the first round pick, and they're naming him the right tackle right away. So we'll see how it goes. He has a lot of tools, but, you know, obviously his film was a little inconsistent, which is why he wasn't universally seen as a first round pick.
Right. Leatherwood is one of, if not the not the best, but one of the top, you know, run blocking, capable, mauling downhill offensive linemen. And do you think that the Raiders are going to deploy a little bit more gap power man scheme this year, or they're going to continue that healthy mix that they've had previously?
I think they're going to be a mix of both. I think Leatherwood is a very good athlete. Where he has trouble is with his technique. And Cable's done a pretty good job of coaching up guys in the last few years he's been with the Raiders. So they're confident that they think Cable could fix his technical problems. But it's going to be a huge it's going to be a huge test against the Baltimore Ravens, who have, you know, a very heavy pressure scheme. And that's going to put the young tackle, you know, to the test mentally as well as physically.
Especially mentally, Wink Martindale will try and overload you and figure out ways to get you to look the wrong way and attack your protections in different ways, as we've discussed in the show so many times. And overall, you know, this passing game feels like it is ready to almost, you know, the Raiders passing game feels like it's at an impasse almost of necessity to explode in ways and have Darren Waller be a centerpiece, see what Henry Ruggs can do in year two. So where do you think this passing game goes, and what do we maybe see differently from teams of Raiders past?
Yeah, I think Ruggs was, you know, he did have some trouble adjusting to the league because he just wasn't strong enough. And he put a lot of emphasis on getting a lot on bigger, getting bigger this offseason and gained 10 pounds. Reportedly, hey, it looks pretty good at training camp, but you can say that about anybody at this time of the year. But yeah, I mean, Ruggs just couldn't. I mean, he got open and he made some plays, but he just didn't have a great connection with Derek Carr last year. There were times where he was open and Carr would miss him, or maybe he ran his route a little bit wrong. And, you know, some of that has to do with the fact that they didn't have training camp together. And Carr is a type of quarterback where he really needs to trust his receivers to let the ball go. And he developed that trust with Nelson Agholor, who had a really good season last year. And I think the Raiders are hoping that, you know, some of those targets go to Ruggs, and Ruggs could be as productive, if not more productive, than Agholor. But a lot of the how explosive this passing game is going to be is going to hinge on how Ruggs develops. And obviously, Darren Waller is the number one receiver. Yeah, he's a tight end, but he's the number one guy in this offense. Another guy that they're really excited about is Bryan Edwards, who I had a really high rating on him last year in a draft, and they were able to get him a fourth round. And part of that is because of injuries, and he was injured last year. But if he can stay healthy, he looks like he could be a real physical force on the outside for Carr as well.
Absolutely. Bryan Edwards, someone I was very high on as well. Ultimate physical capability, just an absolute beast through contact. And Ted, you were actually – so funny story of how I really started to become a big fan of your work and what you do on the Tweety Bird app was I was convinced that the Ravens weren't going to take Hollywood Brown, because I kind of looked at the Ravens offense prior to the 2019 draft. And so I was like, okay, well, the Ravens had John Brown and Lamar Jackson kind of struggled to establish a connection. And with guys like AJ Brown, Debo Samuel, DK Metcalf, all these bigger targets with bigger catch radiuses, I thought, you know, wow, I could really see them taking a larger receiver. Didn't study a ton on Hollywood Brown. And lo and behold, I was a little bit baffled by the pick and needed to find some quick insight into tape that I hadn't really watched. And you were very high on Hollywood Brown, if I recall correctly. And his ability, what you really turned me on to was he's almost untouchable coming off of the line of scrimmage. So my question is, diving a little deeper into Henry Ruggs, who's someone that I had a very high grade on in this class, how has Henry Ruggs shown, or has he been put in positions where he needs to release? How is he handling NFL cornerbacks? You said that he was struggling size-wise. So that's one player that I've been mightily curious about myself, and we've talked about on this podcast a ton.
Yeah, I think I was really high on Brown because, he was untouchable at the line of scrimmage, but he wasn't winning because he was just so much more physical than other guys. He just had a really good feel for how to be elusive, and he had great foot speed. So he was able to get away from guys on the line of scrimmage. And I think, you know, that he could still be better. He struggled some drops last year. And, you know, I think that there were times where Lamar Jackson did miss him and he was wide open. And if you hit some of those passes, the numbers would have been a lot different for Hollywood Brown. So I'm still high on him. I know some guys are going off the Hollywood Brown train. But as far as Henry Ruggs, there's a few things that Henry Ruggs struggles with when it comes to press coverage. And one of them is he doesn't really close the space on cornerbacks. He makes his moves a little too early. And when you do that, you just make the job easier for the defensive back. And I don't know if that's just from fear of I don't think he's scared of contact, but I think that, you know, when NFL corners get their hands on him, he doesn't really have the strength to kind of knock him away or run through that contact just yet. We'll see how he plays with that added strength. And yeah, just there are times when NFL corners get their hands on him and they just significantly slow him down. And that's one of the things that I really look for in receivers, ability to run past contact. And that's one of the reasons why that's one of the big concerns I had with Henry Ruggs coming into the draft. So we'll see how that added strength can help him improve in those areas.
Absolutely. You always want to see receivers attacking the toes of defensive backs and forcing them to open their hips one way or the other. But flipping over to the other side of the ball, Gus Bradley, Rod Marinelli, I mean, two legends in this game. A lot of turnover. Trevon Merrig, someone that I was mightily, mightily excited about. I think he was definitely higher on kind of the media consensus board and mocked into the first round a ton. Feels like a huge addition to this defense. So conversely, what are the feelings about a defense that has now been, you know, towards the bottom of EPA allowed and been just struggling for the last couple of years, and how they're going to turn that around? They've invested a ton of resources into it. So where do you see them improving schematically and maybe just from a philosophical standpoint?
The Raiders defense has been bad for a long, long time. And it's almost impressive how
it is very
how consistent it's been, because, you know, like one of the things that we figured out just through looking at years is defense is very, it varies a lot. So you could be a top five defense one year, you could be a bottom five defense one year, and it moves around a lot. But with the Raiders, they've been consistently at the bottom five for a long, long time. And one of the problems that players talked about last year was Paul Gunther's defense was just a little too complicated, and it was hard for them to pick up. It was hard for them to execute. They were thinking too much. And with Gus Bradley, you get the total opposite approach. You get a very simple approach that doesn't bog you down with scheme. They believe in having players play, you know, think fast and execute fast. So we'll see how see if it really translates on the field, and if Gus Bradley can get these guys to play faster than they have been.
And diving into the secondary, it feels like a secondary that has had consistent investment over time in draft capital, especially. So where are things going to shake out? I know Jonathan Abram has been a very polarizing talent in ways while also struggling in coverage at times, and the investments that they've made at cornerback. And how do you think things are going to get shaken up on the back end?
Yeah. So, they have invested a lot of capital in the secondary. Abram is obviously kind of a hit or miss type of player. You know, he makes big plays, but he also gives up big plays because of his aggression. But hopefully with him playing more in the box, because he's going to play that Cam Chancellor strong safe, classic strong safety role, where he won't be asked to play deep as often. Hopefully that will negate some of those bad plays. He definitely has the ability to be a playmaker. Just, you know, he's got to understand when to take chances and when he can't take chances. Trayvon Mullen is a corner they drafted in the second round, who is developing pretty nicely. I think he could be a good, solid corner. I don't know if he'll ever be an elite corner, but I think he could be a good, solid corner for them. And last year's pick, Damon Arnette, things aren't looking too great for him. Right now, Casey Hayward, who they signed in free agency and who has played for Gus Bradley, is right. Looks like he's going to be the starter. That might be a move just because they want to kind of, you know, light a fire under his ass and get him to get going. But right now, Hayward, who didn't have a great year last year, who needs to bounce back, is the starter. So that's not a good sign for Arnette, who was, you know, seen as a reach in the first round last year.
Absolutely. And one of the players that I think I wasn't quite as high as Mayock and Gruden were, apparently, but one of the players I'm very curious to see, especially with this rotation of pass rushers that Mayock and company have brought in, is Cleveland Farrell. And someone that I was extremely high on, with heavy hands and strong intuition against the run and intelligence, frankly, but had a better year last year, certainly, and showed some real flash at times, but it feels like there's just going to be a very heavy rotation. Where do you see him, a super high draft pick that I think surprised a lot of people at the time? People had him falling, you know, into the 15, 20, 25 range. How do you see Cleveland Farrell shaping into this pass rush? And what do you see this pass rush turning into over time as the season progresses, now that you've been able to study some Gus Bradley and know what Rod Marinelli likes to do and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so Farrell is kind of a victim of where he was drafted, because I think he's a very solid player. I thought he was a solid player coming to the draft. I did not think he was anywhere close to being a top 10 pick, let alone a top 5 pick. So, you know, when you're picked that high, the expectations are going to be very, very high for you. People are expecting him, you know, if you're drafted in the top 5, you got to be a guy that challenges for double-digit sacks every year. I don't think he'll be that guy. I think he'll be a guy that maybe gets around 5 to 8 sacks and is borderline elite against the run, which is what he's shown. You know, and he could kick inside and pass rush from the inside at times too. I think that's the ceiling for him. I don't think he's going to ever be a guy that will, you know, sack the quarterback 12, 13 times in a season. And that's not really what you want in a top 5 pick. But he was drafted there. I think he's going to be a solid player. I think the Raiders really missed him as far as their run defense when he was injured last year. But when it comes to fitting in this defense, he fits that role of a big end, because Gus Bradley usually has a big end and a Leo or weak side end, and the big end lines up on the tight end side, and he has to be strong against the run, and that's what Farrell does. So he could potentially be a starter next year, even with the addition of Giannis Ngakoue. And as you watch a lot of Ngakoue last season. He's not a great run defender. So it seems like the plan might be to start Farrell at the strong side end position and to start Ngakoue at the weak side end position. But Ngakoue did add some weight this season. So there might be a chance that Farrell hits the bench and it might start Ngakoue at the big end and just sacrifice the run defense to have two legit pass rushers with Max Crosby and Ngakoue out there at the same time.
Absolutely. Max Crosby, maybe one of the most underrated players in the entire NFL right now. You can absolutely use him for this answer, but who do you feel like is the make or break X factor, or even positional group if you want to, going into the season on that Raiders defense?
I think Morey could potentially be a big impact player in this defense. They really didn't have a middle of the field type of player on the roster. I was very high in Morey coming to the draft, and I think the rumor was that he dropped because of a potential back injury. But right. So far, he's looked really healthy while in Las Vegas. So if he's 100% healthy, I think that's an absolute steal in the second round. He didn't play in a one high system for TCU, but you saw, ball skills. He takes really good angles. He's a really multifaceted safety that I think will translate into in this defense. And I can't wait to see what he can do at center field, because the Raiders really missed a center fielder, or really haven't had a center fielder with that kind of range in a middle of their defense in a long time.
Right. And it allows them to play those middle of the field closed coverages, those cover ones, those cover threes, and all that good stuff. So going back to this matchup, it's week one. It's I don't want to ask you for a prediction necessarily, but just generally, how do you feel about this matchup? And I know that you stay up to date across the NFL. As you said, you're a football guy through and through. So how do you feel about where this Ravens team is and where this Raiders team will be? And looking at this matchup, how do you feel generally this side of this matchup will go?
I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think in any other week, I would say the Ravens will probably win this one, just because, they've been good for so long. That running attack is going to be really difficult for this defense to stop. It's going to be the first game in Gus Bradley's system. And the Raiders just were not very good at stopping a run last year. I don't think they made any huge additions as far as run stoppers. And offensively, it's going to be a big test for that offensive line to handle those blitz schemes that, usually it would take a more veteran group to be able to communicate and sort through those pressures. But I think, new stadium, Monday Night Football, and I've seen this in the past where, you think the Raiders are out of it, and then all of a sudden there's a really high-scoring game and they're in it. I feel like it's going to be one of those super high-scoring games where whoever has the ball last is going to win.
Absolutely. A very exciting matchup. Prime time with fans in Allegiant Stadium. I can't wait for it. Ted, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything you're working on or that you want to plug before we get you out of here?
Well, I'm releasing an article tomorrow. Tuesday is called the Language of Defensive Coverages. And
beautiful.
I really interesting. I did a lot of research on just the language of defenses and coverages and all these different families. It could be a little confusing, but I had a lot of fun writing it. So it'll be out tomorrow if you're interested in that.
Absolutely. That's what people always ask, where do I start if I want to learn football? And I say, I think you should start with coverages and learn that and then ease your way in where it gets a little faster. But Ted, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming on, and make sure to give a follow, check out his work on The Athletic, to the maybe best combination of pizza chef and football knowledge that you can find on the internet. Again, thank you so much, Ted, and have a wonderful rest of your evening.
You too.
Take it easy.
Gourlami. Gourlami.
Arrivederci.
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 Riverdance.